Revolutions Per Minute is a weekly radio show from the New York City chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America, recorded live at WBAI 99.5 in Brooklyn every Tuesday at 5. RPM is about doing the work to build a democratic socialist future. Every week, hear the latest news, analysis, and organizing experience from the minds and hearts of activists fighting every day in NYC. Join the movement at socialists.nyc.
Hi, New York City. You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on WBAI. We are a socialist radio show and podcast from the members of the New York City Democratic Socialists of America. My name is Amy Wilson. I'm an organizer with the North Brooklyn branch of the DSA of New York City. And today I'm here with some of my comrades from the borough to the north, Queens. We'll be talking about the DSA campaign to get involved in a very dramatic electoral fight unfolding in the borough. So to give you some background here, for the first time since 1991, the borough of Queens this year on June 25th will have a contested Democratic primary election for the role of district attorney. A seven-way race includes the current borough president, Melinda Katz, prosecutors from former DA Dick Brown's office, and Tiffany Caban, a 31-year-old public defender backed by a left coalition, including the Democratic Socialists of America. So today, on today's show, we'll speak to Queens activists familiar with this race about criminal injustice in New York City, this unique political moment in Queens, and the path to victory for Tiffany Caban and her platform of trauma-informed, holistic criminal justice reform. But first, the headlines.
Hello, New York City. This is Kyle Sorrell with the headlines on Revolutions Per Minute, brought to you by The Thorn. In local predatory capitalism news, a New York Times expose about the taxi medallion loan industry that preys on New York City drivers prompted New York Attorney General Tish James to open an investigation into abusive lending practices happening at the expense of immigrant drivers, many of whom have committed suicide under the burden of extreme debt. In political corruption news, the Alliance for Rental Excellence in New York, a real estate group representing landlord interests, has hired a lobbying firm started by Andrew Cuomo's former campaign manager. Now that's what I call synergy. DSA member and NYC public advocate Jamani Williams wrote an op-ed for the Daily News arguing for expunging the records of those with marijuana charges, admitting that he himself sold the drug growing up. In other electoral news, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez endorsed Tiffany Caban for Queens District Attorney, which is AOC's first local endorsement since taking office this year. Assembly members Ron Kim, District 40 Flushing, and Yulin Nu, District 65 Manhattan Chinatown, were both prominent supporters of sex work decriminalization efforts in Albany, also endorsed Caban, citing her decriminalization pledge. You'll hear all about Tiffany Caban's campaign for district attorney in this episode of RPM. Finally, here's a short segment from RPM's own Lee Zishi about the movement for public banking.
Get up! Get down! A public bank is coming to town! Get up! Get down! A public bank is coming to town!
Last Friday, the Public Bank NYC Coalition, which includes members of the DSA Debt and Finance Working Group, rallied in downtown Manhattan outside of the New York City Banking Commission meeting, calling on them to stop putting city funds, aka our money, into Wall Street megabank Wells Fargo. The city began cutting ties with Wells Fargo in 2017 after the bank was involved in a number of high-profile scandals that included scamming primarily communities of color and funding the Dakota Access Pipeline.
Right now, the city primarily banks with Wall Street mega banks like Chase, Bank of America, and Citibank. In 2017, the city announced it was cutting ties with Wells Fargo. But has yet to completely divest from the bank. We applaud the Banking Commission for continuing to reduce the city's business with Wells Fargo. But at the same time, the city must go faster and further to ensure that public money works for the public good.
The coalition's demands go beyond just Wells Fargo, though, and they are organizing long-term to get all of the city's funds out of Wall Street banks and into a public bank that invests in public good, not private gain.
Investing from Wells Fargo is only the beginning. When it comes to banks that harm New Yorkers and New York City neighborhoods, Wells Fargo is just the tip of the iceberg. Many of New York City's so-called designated banks redline and extract wealth from immigrant neighborhoods and neighborhoods of color and invest in heavily destructive industries such as fossil fuel extraction, private prisons, immigrant detention centers, and real estate speculation that has hurt all of us in all of our communities.
At the meeting, the commission announced it had yet to completely divest from Wells Fargo, and it would renew the bank's conditional designation, allowing it to hold city funds for another 2 years, once again stressing the city's reluctance to cut ties with Wall Street banks. For Revolutions Per Minute, this is Lee Zishi.
Thanks, Lee. Now back to you, Amy.
Thanks so much, Kyle and Lee. One thing that I like about being a socialist organizer is that it brings you closer to your fellow man. And I'm very close to two of my fellow men here in the studio today, here in Brooklyn. I have John McFarlane and Aaron Tobe. John McFarlane is a lifelong resident of Queens. He's an activist and a member of Court Watch. Aaron Tobe is a volunteer organizer with Queens DSA and our electoral working group. And today I'll be speaking with Aaron and John about DSA's campaign to elect Tiffany Caban in the Queens District Attorney position. And doing some research preparing for this show, I found an article actually from the New York Times in December 2015 that outlined the extremely long tenure of District Attorney Dick Brown, who just passed away a few weeks ago. There was this interesting quote that I've been turning over in my mind. It says, "District attorneys in New York are virtually like Supreme Court justices. They're there forever. The judiciary is one of the last bastions of machine control." So today on the show, we're going to be talking a little bit about how that plays out in Queens and how that has affected the life of its residents over the last 30 years under District Attorney Dick Brown. We're going to be talking about Tiffany Caban and her vision for how that can change our involvement as DSA and how and why we feel that this is a race that socialists in New York City need to get behind. And we'll be talking as well about the path to victory for Tiffany up until the Democratic primary, which is when, Aaron and John?
June 25th.
June 25th. Okay, great. All right, you're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in NYC, broadcasting at 99.5 FM, and streaming on your favorite podcast app. To connect with us after the show, you can email us at revolutionsnyc@gmail.com or sign up for our newsletter to get links to what we talk about on the show. You can also do that on our website, which is revolutionsperminute.simplecast.com. You can find us on Twitter at NYCRPM. Today we're talking about Tiffany Caban, a candidate for district attorney in Queens. And let's set the scene a little bit in terms of the current landscape of criminal justice or criminal injustice in New York City. So with us today we have John McFarlane. John, hi, how are you doing?
How you doing, Amy? Thanks for having me today.
Great. We're so happy that you're here. Can you speak a little bit from your experience as a Queens native and organizer and an activist to what is the landscape of the criminal justice system in Queens? How does that play out in the lives of its citizens? And what are some of the drawbacks that you've seen or experienced in your time?
Okay. The landscape as it applies to Queens Borough is devastating. I'm 50 years old. I am a lifelong Queens native, and I have seen the dehumanizing effects of the last 30 years of the judiciary against black and brown people specifically. You have people languishing in Rikers Island for a dime bag of marijuana, for jumping turnstiles, for peeing, for loitering, for standing on the corner after midnight. All of these policies have been coordinated and controlled by Richard Brown. It's a top-down effect. It has devastated my neighborhood and neighborhoods adjacent to mine, South Ozone Park, Hollis, Rosedale, to name a few. There are a lot of people who can't find unemployment because of these low-level offenses. And you can go back 30 years to the devastating impact, and you can see it in the streets of the homeless who don't have jobs, who can't get apartments, who can't pay rent. You can find it in schools, from the school to prison pipeline in Queens, where you have students getting arrested for talking back to teachers. misdemeanor offenses. You can find it in parks. You can find it within the factions of the police department that still to this day pull stop and frisk. We could go into a background on that, but that would be another program that affecting the five boroughs, not just Queens, but specifically speaking to criminal justice reform. It's sorely needed. Richard Brown spent 28 years in the DA's office micromanaging his ADAs to make sure they put their heels on the backs of black and brown people's necks. And the result of that is a group of people that don't have access to many of the basic resources that would stem from government participation or government donations, government funding, I should say, I'm sorry, of services these services are specifically designed to help out black and brown people and people with low income. And a lot of people have been cut off from that because of the devastating effects of Richard Brown.
Mm-hmm. Can you speak a little bit about Court Watch and what you do there?
Yeah, so Court Watch is a hybrid organization, but funded by Vocal New York, Five Boroughs Defender, and another group right now. I can't remember the name. I'm sorry, but what we do is we watch at arraignments, the defendants that come in, and we monitor and we watch how the ADAs proceed with the cases in front of the judge. Then we report back, and when we report back, we make sure that all the information that we gather is compiled in one data set, and then we report out and we let the citizenry know exactly what we see. Sometimes we like go to the ADAs and we explain to them what we've seen, and maybe that'll change their conduct, and maybe it won't, but that's what we do primarily.
Mm-hmm. So when you speak about the criminal justice system in Queens, you're speaking as somebody who is a native, and you're also speaking of somebody who is an observer of the system. In how often would you say that you're in the courtroom?
I'm in the courtroom maybe once a week. I work with other observers, and they report out like I do. And similarly, the effect is to monitor the ADAs and the Queens DA's office, as well as speak for the accused in court. Okay, and then when we're there, our presence is known, and we think that sometimes it changes the behavior of the ADA. If they know they're being monitored, they will think twice about asking for bail, or what we call like enormous bail in certain situations. And sometimes we feel it has an effect on the judge, where the judge, instead of ordering bail, will probably remand the accused. We'll probably release the accused and set a court date for them to come back. So that's you know, the purpose of Court Watch.
Sure. And you are connected to Aaron here, who's sitting between us, by the fact that you've both been out canvassing frequently for Tiffany Caban. So can you speak a little bit about what you see as the strongest planks in Tiffany Caban's platform? What attracted you to supporting her as a candidate?
Well, Tiffany Caban will end the criminalization of a lot of low-level offenses. Marijuana possession, she plans to decriminalize sex work, which is very important in Queens.
Right.
Her platform also entails building a rapport with a lot of social justice organizations. She plans to bring us into the fold, so when she creates policy, she'll get input from a lot of the organizations that have been on the ground in support of her. She's got 7 years public defender service, and you'll hear people say, oh, but she's not a prosecutor. We're not looking for another prosecutor to take over the DA's office in Queens. Okay, we've dealt with 30 years of a prosecutor, and like I said, it has had a devastating effect on Queens residents. We feel like it's time to try something new. That's what the progressive movement is about. Mm-hmm. It's time to put somebody else with a different perspective in that office. 7 years as a public defender is fine with me. She knows the people that she's defending. She understands where we come from. She understands why it is that a person has to jump a turnstile. She understands why it is that maybe somebody might be walking around with a dime bag of weed, why they shouldn't have a record for that.
Right.
Her platform is the platform of progressive. Her platform is the platform of the people. Okay. The Queens machine has been alive and operating for so long in Queens that, for example, Richard Brown, he stayed in office 28 years. You couldn't get him out with a bulldozer.
Right.
You know, so we want to try something different. We want to try something with a cleaner and newer perspective, a perspective towards the enhancement of the people. And we think that Tiffany Caban for Queens ADA is it.
Wonderful. I think that it's important to underline when we talk about this race in particular, it's important to underline the enormous diversity of Queens as a borough. It would be, I read it would be the fourth largest city in the country if it were to be an independent city. And it might be the most linguistically diverse place in the world. They know of at least 160 languages that are spoken in Queens, and that's just the ones that they know of. So when we talk about things like reducing New York City's support for ICE, becoming a true sanctuary city, Queens is the borough where, you know, that could make potentially the greatest impact.
Correct, yes, definitely. Speaking towards immigrants and what they've been through, it started in the courthouse, and now it's moved to the streets. Immigrants are not safe anywhere in Queens. Through the policies of the Queens prosecutor, who has pretty much sided with ICE, you know, acquiesced in their actions and their conduct, immigrants have no safe haven. There are some safe spaces that people like progressives and maybe some churches have tried to carve out, but it's not enough. Right now, immigrants, they're fighting to get driver's licenses.
Mm-hmm.
They're fighting to stay employed. They're fighting to keep their kids in school. Any of which, if they try, ICE rolls up, takes the kids, separates the kids from the parents. The parents get dumped in detainee cells, cages, if it were, and these have long-lasting effects of a permanent nature.
Absolutely.
All right. People, they're praying to get the families back, but you don't know.
Absolutely. And the fact that you bring up the long-lasting effects of things like family separation is something that I feel that Tiffany Caban has spoken to really eloquently in her public-facing materials. She talks about things like intergenerational trauma and how, incarceration of a parent has effects that last down through their kids, their children's children.
Absolutely.
And she's really the only person, especially in this race, she's the only person who's willing to speak about things in that type of language, I think. Thank you so much, John, for contributing your knowledge of the landscape in Queens. Before we move on, is there anything else that you would like to add about Tiffany Caban?
Tiffany comes from a background that is set against her own personal trauma. I'll let her speak to that when she does her, campaigning. But she comes from a background that I understand, that people that have been incarcerated understand, that people that have been abused understand. Any kind of family trauma, you don't have to necessarily have been incarcerated to understand where she comes from and why she talks about what she wants to do as Queens DA.
Right.
I think that she'll make a perfect DA. I think that she'll have an all-inclusive policy. The last 30 years have been exclusive, primarily law enforcement, and that was it. This is the time. We're sitting on a precipice of something great. I think that AOC, she got elected. She's in the House of Representatives. But there are people in the House behind closed doors that have tried to stymie her progress. If Tiffany Caban becomes Queens DA, she is in charge. There is nobody that she is being held accountable to but herself. Mm-hmm. So she can create policy that will help all of us, and that's important. That's what is at stake here. It's policies that will create hope for everyone, and that's what we're looking forward to. So I thank you again, Amy.
Absolutely. I think that that's very well said. It would be enormously powerful to have somebody like Tiffany in the DA seat in Queens. One thing that I really respond to about Tiffany's approach is that I find her to be a very empathetic person, as you alluded to, John. She has an understanding of the holistic nature of people and how they're affected by multiple different forces acting on them in their lives. And to that effect, we have a bit of an anecdote directly from Tiffany that illustrates how forces can interlock and intersect to combine to have a cascading effect upon their ultimate fate. So are we ready to play? Yeah.
I had a client who was prosecuted for a turnstile jump. And this was a week, again, after the DA said, hey, we're not prosecuting these cases anymore. And they told me my client was the exception to the rule. Why? Because my client was on parole. He served prison time. He had to serve 5 years of post-release supervision. He had served 3 without any trouble. Jumped the turnstile to get to his parole meeting because technical violation, if he didn't get there, he would have been thrown back in jail for 6 months. In the 3 years he was out, he completed a drug program, got housing, took him about a year and a half to get. When you fight a case for a year, you make 8, 9, 10 court dates. He came 5'2" shorter than me. He came every single court date with a 6-foot girlfriend. This is like a guy who had a really great relationship that rooted him in his community, and they wanted to didn't want to make him a deal. The parole officer called and said, make him a deal. We don't want to violate him. He's doing so well. I said to the prosecutor, you get him guilty on the misdemeanor, you take away his housing, you take away his sobriety, you take away the relationship that roots him in his community, and then you throw him back on the street and you're asking him to recidivate in more serious ways than a 275 fare. How does that serve public safety?
Hi, everyone. You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in NYC, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming on your favorite podcast app. And with a message about corporate-free media, we have our comrade, Jack Devine.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? This is Jack Devine. You've heard me before on RPM. And the only reason we can have a show like Revolutions Per Minute that, you know, puts socialist politics straight on the airways is because we have an institution like WBAI that is not funded by corporations, that doesn't have to bow to the interests of the corporate, that the corporate media does. It doesn't have to deal with advertisers. It doesn't have to deal with being reliant on big money. It's reliant on our listeners. We really try to be a community here. Like today, we're hearing straight from, you know, John, who's someone in Queens who's been, you know, living there and knows the reality of the place. The only person you hear from who's from Queens on something like CNN or MSNBC is Trump. That's who they portray as the representation of a community when most people in Queens are nothing like Trump. Most people have to struggle every day, and they have real problems they have to deal with. They have to, you know, pay their rent. They have to avoid police violence. They have to avoid getting thrown and locked away in the carceral state. So that's what we're trying to bring here on WBAI, and especially here with RPM. It's perspective of the people. We want to hear from organizers. We want to people who are fighting on the ground, fighting for a better world. So if you want to, you know, reinforce the existence of such a community, such a presence on the airways, become part of the WBAI community. And you can pledge in our name. If Revolutions Per Minute is your favorite show, if you are a socialist and you love hearing about the fight to build socialism here in New York City, pledge in our name. Give a call to 516-620-3602. Again, that's 516-620-3602. Or you can do it online. If you don't want to talk on the phone, that's okay. I understand. I don't like to do it sometimes too. So you can go online. You can go give the number 2, WBAI.org. That's give 2, WBAI.org. Or you can text WBAI, all caps, to 41444. That's text WBAI to 41444. If you want to hear more great socialist content, about organizing, about the fights on the ground, about the great work that people are doing, please, you know, give a little money in our name and, you know, become part of the team, the community. And then you can have, if you become a buddy, you can have democratic voting rights in WBAI and you can shape what comes on here. And if you want more content like Revolutions Per Minute, pledge in our name, become a buddy. All right, let's get back to this amazing show.
The people want more content and they want it to be socialist content. So that's the only way to go. Let's talk about the electoral. We heard a little bit about lived experience and the on-the-ground context in Queens. Let's talk a little bit about this political moment, the electoral context of this primary race coming up on June 25th. And to do so, I have my comrade, Aaron. How you doing, Aaron?
I'm doing great, Amy. Thanks so much for having me here today. It's great to be with everyone.
Great. So, Aaron, tell us a little bit about the background of this race. What's going on in the campaign right now?
Yeah, well, right now we're just knocking as many doors as we can all over Queens because this is a, as we say a lot, it's a people-powered campaign, right? We're up against six candidates, and the filing deadline just came out, and Tiffany received more individual donations than the other six candidates combined. So there are a lot of folks in this race with a lot of money.
So more individual donations than the other six candidates combined?
Yes.
And how does that, what's the average size of the donation around?
I think the average size is like $88, but that was skewed. There were just a couple. In this race, you can give up to like $38,000 or around there. And
wow.
So there were a couple of folks who were very wealthy who donated a lot of money, but they were like individuals.
They're just redistributing their
wealth.
They're
redistributing
their
wealth.
We're cool with that.
Yeah. But the median donation was, I think, like in the 20s. It just sort of was skewed by a couple of big donors. But yeah, so right now it's just a lot of volunteer labor going into just trying to reach as many folks as we can, person to person, because I think that what we really learned on the Ocasio campaign and on Julia Salazar's campaign is that a lot of the media coverage and the ad buys and the mailers, it's all noise. Mm. You know, people, I think this system, especially in Queens, where we have this big machine. You know, right now, Melinda Katz in this race is the machine candidate. She's the borough president. But this whole machine has been set up really to suppress enthusiasm and turnout. And people have learned to ignore politics. So if you put an ad on TV, like, they're not going to pay attention. If you send them a mailer, they don't care. Like, what matters is that you show up at their door, another human being, to have a conversation with them. Then they pay attention. And we saw that. You know, on the Salazar campaign, there was a lot of stuff being written about Julia Salazar in the run-up to her election, and she beat a, like, nine-term incumbent by 15 points because of the strength of the volunteer effort going to talk to people face-to-face. And so I think that that's what we're doing right now.
Right, cool.
Yeah, that's what's going on.
That makes a lot of sense to me. We've been speaking about this race and the Queens machine. I'd like to ask you to dig into that a little bit more in just a moment. But Netflix documentary Knock Down the House, featuring the Ocasio-Cortez campaign, as well as some other campaigns that were very interesting. There's this moment where she's sitting in her apartment and she picks up a Joe Crowley mailer and she calls it a Victoria's Secret catalog. Which I thought was perfect because she's speaking to sort of the money that can blanket everybody's mailbox with these glossy mailers, but there's very little actual engagement with politics, as you say. Mm-hmm. She's critiquing his mailers for having no policy positions, contrasting them with hers, which were very specific and very grounded in policy. So when we say Queens machine, what does that mean?
Sure. So I think it's basically a sort of, I guess, an alliance of like elected officials and sort of like community leaders, and I put community leaders in quotes, or folks who are, you know, in their communities and sort of have kind of like a very top-down leadership, right? And this idea that, like, you know, this Democratic Club, if the leader of the Democratic Club endorses, everyone else is going to vote for them in the clubs, or if the leader of this nonprofit who gets their funding from elected official X, you know, endorses, then that will move votes.
Right, that you can get votes in a package.
In a package, yeah. And really sort of kind of like almost a cartel holding down these elected official positions, right? Like, you know, no one until Alexandria ran, like Joe Crowley never had a contested primary.
Right.
And there are, you know, in addition to sort of just like the sort of, I mean, these people are ruthless, right? For instance, you know, State Senator Jessica Ramos once, she endorsed Melissa Mark Viverito for city council speaker, and the Queens machine like didn't want her to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And there were, and she was a district leader at the time, and their response was basically to throw her off the ballot for district leader and, you know, kick her out of her position. And they like drew her district map to like push her out of her own district.
Mm-hmm.
And so like that's kind of an example of just how like sort of they really enforce this sort of discipline of trying to like control the outcomes of elections.
Right. So when we say there's a party line, that's
felt. Yeah. The Queens machine is not a Big Ten organization. And of course, a lot of this, I should say also, is like is backed with corporate and real estate money, you know, is sort of funding all of this so that the folks who remain in power are friendly to the capitalists.
Absolutely. Well, you can't talk about it without talking about that funding aspect of it. That's a huge piece of it. And I think that's a huge piece of, you know, DSA's stake in these electoral fights in the first place. So we have a bit of a clip that we can play and share with you that's featuring Tiffany herself speaking about her background as a public defender and how that makes her different from the rest of the campaigns in this race. So let's go ahead and roll that.
I stand before you here as the only one at this table who is not a career prosecutor and a career politician. I stand here at the table, the only one who has stood up to our district attorney's offices on the front line in court every day, who has defended working class New Yorkers against the abuses of our criminal justice system, taking trauma-informed, holistic approaches. I am the only public defender in this race. When we talk about the progressive prosecutor, the new way of doing things, these are the things that public defenders have fought for in court, on the front lines, and up in Albany for decades. This is what we have always done. So when you ask, who do you trust to do these things, you can vote and have your next DA be a career politician or a career prosecutor, or your next DA can be a public defender. Who do you trust? Thank you.
So we hear from Tiffany herself talking about how her background as a public defender makes her different. We heard about that from John as well. Aaron, let's talk a little bit more about Ocasio-Cortez and the endorsement that came down last week. Can you speak a little bit about what that's meant for the campaign so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's huge. I think that because there are so many unprincipled people in politics or people who endorse because, you know, they're pressured by such and such machine candidate or whatever. When you have an actually principled person like Alexandria, that really matters. And we've seen that, you know, I've been out canvassing, and if you tell anyone under 40 in a Democratic primary that, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is endorsed, they're all just like, oh, wow, I follow her on Instagram.
Isn't she really popular among, like, the mom demographic, too? I'm surprised to hear you say under 40.
I mean, I just sort of typecast it because I feel like the young folks just like every single one.
Right.
Over 40, you might have some people who are, like, mad about Amazon or whatever, right? And so I think, you know, it's really, you know, we've seen a lot of small dollar donations have come through since she endorsed. The social media attention has been extraordinary. I mean, she is making a huge difference in this race.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's really
exciting. Do you think that's going to translate to, I know you don't have a crystal ball, but do you think that's going to translate to increased volunteership?
Yeah, we're seeing more volunteers show up, and they're telling us, you know, I saw this, you know, I saw Alexandria posted on Twitter. And so they're out. Yeah, it has. You know, made a marked difference in our metrics across the board.
Right. And whenever she touches something, it instantly becomes national news, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's like, and it's just kind of really makes you think about, you know, Joe Crowley was going to be the next Speaker of the House,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
He was like this big, huge deal, but nobody cared about him. Like, you know, we would knock doors in his district and people would not know who he was. And I think it really speaks to the way that Alexandria's politics and her sort of focus on social justice really resonates with people in a way that has made her this person that people actually pay attention to and care about.
Right. But that said, as socialists, yeah. we don't have figureheads.
Sure. Yeah.
We are a collective movement.
Yes.
So can you speak a little bit to the movement that's behind Tiffany Caban?
Yeah. I mean, this is a huge movement. And that's like why Alexandria endorsed, right? I think that the fact that she endorsed speaks to the fact that we can win this race and a lot of people are involved. And I think that this is a great coalition of DSA and Focal and Make the Road and Indivisible and Quip and Amplify Her. And the Working Families Party has been tremendous. We have like, this is just a true, real grassroots movement. And with the exception of Rockaway Youth Task Force, I think like every meaningful grassroots progressive organization in Queens is behind this campaign.
And why do you think that is? Why do you think that Caban is attractive to such a wide range of progressive coalition groups?
She's great. I mean, I think, you know, you heard the clip. She speaks with such authenticity, and you really feel the fact that, you know, the empathy you spoke to, that she really cares about people and making things better. And I think that, you know, she has an element of like class politics that like resonates with everyone, mm-hmm. right? I think that like when we go to doors and we say, you know, right now we're sending people to jail for jumping turnstiles or having a small amount of marijuana on them, but if the landlord turns off the heat in the middle of the winter, like they never get prosecuted. That resonates with everyone, you know, because everyone, whether you had issues with the police, whether you had issues with your landlords, with your employers, like working people understand like sort of innately this sort of like us versus them, you know, class struggle, right? And so I think that that's attractive to a lot of people.
Right.
And when you say attractive to a lot of people, you got to remember where I'm from, a lot of the residents, they're not big on, can I say, judicial participation. Mm-hmm. Because they have been severely disadvantaged by the criminal justice system for so long that they don't have the desire to go out and, say, participate. But somebody like Tiffany Caban, and I noticed because I canvassed recently with Aaron Taub, Bright Limb, a couple of other good comrades of mine, and we were at Parsons and Archer. Now, that's the hub of Jamaica, New York. And I was surprised to find out how many people were interested in, say, the Tiffany Caban campaign. How many people were? It's like if I was campaigning for Katz, they know who Melinda Katz is, and not to disparage anybody, they're not that interested in having another Queens politician sit in the DA's throne or seat, if it were. But when they hear of a public defender or somebody that they can relate to as being on their side,
right?
You know, or even in court, you know, when you say hear public defender, you hear somebody for the people. Mm-hmm. You hear a public defender running. She's got 7 years, so she's not entrenched. And that's how they think out where I live. Okay, she's not 15 or 20 years into the market, so let's give her a chance. And they listen to her platform from us, and they listen to what we have to say about how she's going to reform the justice system. And there's interest there. You know what I mean? It's not Astoria, it's Jamaica, you know. So you'd be quite surprised to find out how many black and brown people in Jamaica are interested in a Tiffany Caban campaign right now.
Right, and that's what it has to be about.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, if the interest isn't there, then you're not going to get people to come out.
That's exactly right.
And you can't, if I may, one more thing, you can't pull the wool over their eyes. You can't come and try to BS them and tell them this and that. Because even though they might not vote, they know these politicians. They've been around 20 years. They've watched their sons and their daughters and their husbands and their wives go through the system, a lot of them. And so you're not going to tell them that, like, this candidate, this city council member is going to do this and that, or this Queensborough president is going to do this and that. They've been there, done that. Doesn't work.
Right.
You get somebody green that comes along sincere about what they're going to do. You look through their record, you see that, well, you know what? Pretty decent record as a public defender. And you give that person a chance, because what do you have to lose?
Sure. Before we go to the phones, I want to underline what you just said, John, and what Aaron just said, and sort of bring some context from a discussion that we had on Saturday when we were preparing for this show. Something that came up, a question that we were batting around, was the question of what is crime, right? Big question, something that it almost gets, we get so involved in the nitty-gritty of these campaigns that we're working on that sometimes it's hard to see the larger picture, I think. But something that's powerful about Caban's approach is she almost is redefining what crime is. So she's saying she's going to prosecute abusive landlords rather than prosecuting people who can't make their rent. It's that in and of itself, I think, is a revolutionary framework. And that's why I think DSA is involved in this race. You know, as a working people's movement, we know that the working class is black and brown. The working class can't build their own power in Queens when they're criminalized for minor offenses, surveilled by the state, and subject to perversions and justice made possible by a racist, xenophobic, capitalist culture. You with me? Great.
Definitely with you.
Great. So I bring that up just to allude to, as Aaron said, we are a Big Ten organization. We are a broad left socialist movement. And the decision to endorse Tiffany Caban was not a unanimous decision on the part of DSA. Progressive prosecutors like Larry Krasner in Philadelphia have sparked many different opinions about the extent to which leftists can responsibly engage with the tools of the carceral state. So this is an ongoing debate within our movement and within our organization. An argument that I personally have found incredibly powerful where it comes to Tiffany Caban and DSA's stake in her platform is that it's a form of material harm reduction. She's going to go to the places where we see some of the greatest harms of the state and work to decarcerate and decriminalize people's neighborhoods, parks, schools, like you said, to start us off, John. And to me, that's incredibly powerful. And that's why I personally support Tiffany Caban, and I would gladly vote for her if I still lived in Queens.
Awesome.
Great. Great, Amy.
So we have around 15 minutes left of the show, so we'd like to speak to you out there in Radio Land. You can call in and talk to us. The number here is 212-209-2877. Once again, that's 212-209-2877. But don't call us yet because you don't know what our question is. The question is, so we have this saying here in DSA, many of us have t-shirts that say it, Queens is the future, right? Queens is one of the most diverse places in the world. It's anything that's popular in Queens is going to be popular everywhere else in about 5 to 10 years. Maybe that's the case as well when we're talking about district attorneys. We hope we can spark a wave. But what does the Queens of the future look like to you when we elect Tiffany Caban? So what does the Queens of the future look like when we have a public defender in the district attorney's office in Queens? The number is 212-209-2877. Say again? Oh, Jack Devine wants to talk to you again.
Hey, everybody, it's Jack, and I hope everyone is enjoying this episode and enjoying everything we do here on RPM and on WBAI in general, which is, you know, a real home for working class politics, for a place that can, that is openly antagonistic towards the forces that are dominating this society, whether that's the real estate industry, the finance industry, the fossil fuel industry, and the political parties that they own and back. We're talking about the Republicans, but also the Democrats, who, you know, there are some good Democrats out there. We've been talking about AOC. We've got Tiffany Caban running in the Democratic primary. But, you know, here at DSA, we we mostly view the Democrats and their sort of apparatuses as tools to use to build worker power. And I think WBAI is a real and critical point of, you know, putting out that message for working people, for building, you know, a radio station that can be a working class institution that shares the stories of organizers like John and Aaron and how they're out here fighting in the streets trying to build power. So if you are enjoying this show, which is RPM, you know, please become a WBAI buddy in our name. And one way you can do that is you can call 516-620-3602. That's 516-620-3602. And, you know, just pledge some money in our name. Become part of this community. You can, once you become part of the WBAI community, you have voting rights, you have real say and power over the content. So if you want more content like this, pledge in our name. You can also do that on the website at give2wbai.org. That's give2wbai.org. Or text WBAI to 41444. That's 41444. We really need more media like WBAI, and we need WBAI to be a strong presence here in New York. So, you know, become part of the community and donate some of your funds if you can.
Thanks, Jack. And thanks again, Aaron and John, for being here talking about how DSA is once again taking on the machine, coming up to the Democratic primary on June 25th, supporting the campaign of Tiffany Caban, a public defender and advocate. Before we end our show for tonight, I'd like to speak a little bit with Aaron and John about how you can get involved with the Caban campaign. What are you looking for? What do you need? And what are the next couple weeks going to look like for the campaign?
Yeah, I mean, the next week, what we need is help talking to voters, right? More than anything else. I mean, this is a people-powered campaign. You can go to map.cabanforqueens.com. We are canvassing every day. We are phone banking almost every day. Sign up. You can sign up to Canvas. You can sign up to Phone Bank.
Text Bank.
And just really
make
sure.
Phone and text banking is a really good option for people who can't
important.
Do canvassing.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, those are the three main things that we really need from folks. You know, if you have some money to give, cabanforqueens.com/donate is the link. But really, I mean, especially, you know, folks listening to this show, you know, more than anything else, you know, especially as me as like as a field organizer, I am obsessed with one-to-one voter contact, mm-hmm. and I would love for folks to knock doors, make phone calls, and send texts.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, this is a ground roots campaign, and while we like the donations,
yeah.
the people power is what makes this thing what it is. You mm-hmm. know, Tiffany Caban, I think when it comes to people power, is in a league by herself, okay? And the other candidates know that. Don't get it wrong. They know that. And they look at Tiffany, and nothing they can put together is going to compare to what she has accomplished thus far. But please, if you can, go to map.caban.
Yeah, map.cabanforqueens.com.
.com and participate. One day a week. One day for the next month, whatever you can give us, we'll take.
Mm. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. If you can make that weekly commitment, if everyone listening to this show does one phone bank or one door knocking shift a week, we will win this race.
I count on you to give a weekly commitment?
Yeah.
did we have a caller come in there, Reggie?
Yeah.
Hi, you're on the air with Revolutions Per Minute. What do you have to say about the Queens of the Future?
You know, this is... My name's John. I'm from the Boston area, and you piqued my interest when you talked about Queens being ahead of the curve. I would tell you that, and I'm not so sure about that, we see up in Massachusetts, marijuana has been legalized, and we've seen that lift a lot of boats, including workers' boats. Many of the licenses and the people who are working now at the dispensaries that have started up and have put in for licenses are people who are minorities and people who actually have been in the legal system because they've been incarcerated, convicted of crimes that involve marijuana, and they're getting a leg up. And I'd ask you, what is the position of your candidate in terms of legalized marijuana.
Thanks so much, John, for bringing that up and for contributing the experience of your neighborhood. Aaron and John, do you have a response to that?
Yeah. Well, oh, go ahead.
Marijuana is legalized in Massachusetts, correct?
Yeah.
So that's what Tiffany Caban wants to do here in Queens. Mm-hmm. I understand what you're saying when you say the incarcerated have gotten access to licenses and they've been able to participate in the legalization experience. That hasn't happened yet in Queens. And under the former DA, it would not have happened. Under Tiffany Caban's platform, she will legalize marijuana in Queens so that those same dispensaries that you're talking about can be accessible to people with records who have been formerly incarcerated in Queens. And that's what we're looking forward to here where we're campaigning.
Yeah, I will say that just from my experience, it certainly is a big part of the conversation here in New York
Definitely.
City is legalization and what that means, how to do it right, right? So you don't want to have the situation of, marijuana becomes legalized and then it becomes something for middle-class white ladies.
Right. It becomes a capitalistic movement or, a capitalist-only product. And we're trying to make it so that when it does get legalized, everybody's got a everybody has fair access to the marijuana and also to the remedies if something does go wrong, if there is a loophole, because there's always a loophole, and that's what we attempt to close with when we legalize marijuana here in New York. We want to close any loopholes that would render black and brown people or low-income people susceptible to incarceration because of any statutes that might be on the books.
Mm-hmm. And when I, as an observer, think of Tiffany Caban and her platform and her campaign, that is actually one of the things that I think of first.
Correct.
And I also think of sex work decriminalization. That's one of the things that she's come out strongest for and has really pushed the conversation here in New York City, which I think is incredibly admirable. So we're coming to the end of our show for this week. But before we do that, I wanted to speak with you too a little bit as experienced canvassers and maybe try to assuage some fears from people who may be listening out there in New York City who want to get involved but are a little intimidated or afraid of canvassing. You know, we live in a culture where it's unusual to speak to your neighbors. And that's one thing that I found powerful when I've canvassed for various candidates and campaigns is you get out there, you actually go into people's buildings, you see what New York looks right. like, and you get this really powerful perspective on the people who are living around you. So what's your experience from that on the people-to-people level? What do you find interesting or productive about canvassing?
Yeah, canvassing rules. It's the best thing you can do. I think that when I first started, the way I got involved in canvassing is I joined the electoral working group in Queens and we didn't have much and we needed someone to run the field operation if we were going to endorse this wonderful candidate, Alexandria, who had come to us for our endorsement. And I really had done like three canvassing shifts before I sort of was like our field lead in Queens. And I was super anxious about it. And it was something I did because I felt like I needed to do it. But over time, I'm not like a cool social person. I have like a lot of anxiety, but I've come to really love it because you get to see the borough. Like you get inside people's buildings, you mm-hmm. see, you get a peek into their apartments. You see like what people's lives are like. You meet all kinds of people. I think there are a lot of people who don't want to talk to you, but there's also a lot of people who are like so thrilled that you're there to tell them that there's an election, or who are just like. I had a dude, it was Ramadan last year, a guy invited me in for iftar and we had dinner together. I have met one woman gave me a piece of pie when I was canvassing against the Amazon deal. Like folks are generous and warm and it really sort of like restores your faith in community and in people at this like dark political moment. And yeah, I think it's a wonderful experience, and it's how we win elections as grassroots organizers.
Absolutely. You can say that again. It's how we win elections as grassroots organizers.
How we win elections.
I think of it kind of like working out. You hate it, and you hate yourself when you start, and then by the end, you're feeling really good. So everybody get out there and follow New York City RPM at NYC RPM on Twitter. Thanks so much, Aaron, John, Reggie, WBAI. This has been Revolutions Per Minute, a weekly radio show from the New York City Democratic Socialists of America. We'll be back again next week for more on our work to build socialism in our lifetime.